Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Hello and welcome to the Racing Post postcast. I'm Dan Walsh. No Maddie Playle today. She's having a well-deserved day off. I'm joined today by Lee Mottershead. Just want to say, Lee, congratulations on once again being nominated Reporter of the Year for the Derby Awards.
Oh, it's very sweet of you. Yes, yes. It's always nice to be recognised by one's peers. One lives in hope.
What would you say from the past year? What is the story that stands out to you?
In terms of a news story, the departure of Delia Bushell from the Jockey Club was a pretty exciting one to cover. As indeed was, I did a special report on racing coming back from COVID, speaking to the big players in that one. So that was fascinating too. And a lot of what I get to do, Dan, is really interesting interviews with people. And in the summer, I spent the morning with Mick Easterby at his stables in Sherifot. And I can tell you that was an experience. And amazingly, for a visitor to Mick Easterby's yard, not only did I not come away having bought a share in a horse, I came away with a free jar of the Easterby's family honey. So that was, I think, an unprecedented success.
Oh, I remember it well. Very quotable, that story.
Mick Easterby is very quotable, full stop.
Lee, did he have a piece of string holding up his trousers?
I've got to keep my eyes away from his trousers, to be honest, business. He was looking very smart. And he was, I have great memories of him driving along one of his fields with Ed Whittaker, our top photographer, in the back. I think probably a dog in there as well. But as we didn't want to get too close to each other during these COVID times, I sort of stood on the side of this Jeep holding on for dear life. First, as Mick drove around his fields, but then to my surprise, he took us on the roads in it. So it was probably against the law driving along country roads, or holding onto the side of a Land Rover, a Jeep, whatever it was. And if it had gone wrong, I could have got a colour piece out of that as well. But thankfully, I survived.
And of course, joined by Paul Binfield from Paddy Power. How are we doing, Paul?
I'm doing well, Dan. I know that you're slightly nervous, your first time presenting. I remember my first time on the postcast. Bruce Millington asked me to tell me a little bit about myself, Dan. So let me just ask you, what's your name? Where do you come from? And tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, swiftly moving on.
Come on, listeners want to know, Dan. Come on.
They will find out in time, I've no doubt. But we're here to review the weekend's action. I managed to swerve that one, Anna.
Can I just say that it's very good to have two Northerners on this programme as well.
I would say, I'm not sure.
I'm not so sure about that.
I don't think the listeners are too used to an accent like mine popping up, but we'll see how we go. We're going to start the weekend's action with Haydock and Master Tommy Tucker. A horse that's been known to have a little bit of sketchy jumping now and then with the F's next to its name in the form book. But when this horse does get round, there's usually a one. So has he kind of found his way with the jumping now, do we think? What kind of targets do we think he's going to be aiming for now? We'll start with you, Lee.
Well, I think the problem with targets is that Paul Nicholls isn't sure yet himself either. He was quoted yesterday saying it's a bit of an open book with the horse in terms of where he goes. It was a weekend of, I suppose, highs and lows for Paul Nicholls. Master Tommy Tucker was definitely one of the highs. He's a bit of a complicated individual in the sense that he's a horse who's basically a good jumper who falls a lot. He's got a lot of Fs against his name, and I think they've been very clever to give him two runs in soft company, or not soft company, but in smaller field graduation type races at Huntingdon and now Haydock in relatively quick succession. He jumped basically well in both those races, albeit he's a pretty low style over his fences. He's a bit like a 110-metre hurdle in athletics. He doesn't waste an inch when he's getting across the top of the birch. But those two runs should have done him good, should have given him confidence. I think it'll always be quite hair-raising to watch, but I could certainly see him being geared towards a Ryanair chase. He's probably got a decent handicap in him beforehand, though, so I wonder if he'll turn up in that December the December Gold Cup at Cheltenham, the one that's had all those names over the past, like Massey Ferguson, Triple Print, Andy Stewart sponsored it. It's a race I think could suit him.
I mean, Benners, he achieved a rating of 165, the Racing Post rating, in this race just this last weekend. Would that be signalling that you could even possibly see a horse like this at in the King George? I mean, he's entered to the Gold Cup, he's entered to the Ryanair. Could this be Paul Nicholls' next big thing?
Well, you never know, do you, Dan? As Lee said, Paul Nicholls wasn't really sure where he might go now. I'm sure he's gone back to have a talk with Sam Twister, and they'll decide where to go. But he could rock up in the King George. If he turned up in the Ryanair, I know we're going to be talking about Imperial Aura later, but we make him a 25-1 poke for the Ryanair and double those odds for the Gold Cup. But he's after that route, he won by 15 lengths. He certainly deserves his place in better company.
I mean, the one thing we probably have to take note of with Master Tommy Tucker is his age. He's 9 turning 10, so there's only so long you can kind of wait with a horse like that now, I suppose.
Yeah, they won't. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's not in his first flush, as it were. So, yeah, I think jumping problems, I suppose, sorted in inverted commas. You'd imagine they did want to try and crack on and find a couple of nice races for him.
So we're going to move on to the Stayers Hurdle now. And I've kind of got a bit of a segment for you here, guys. I'm going to call the main fact file. I've been digging into a bit of research on this horse. So this horse has joined David Pike for £6,000. And since then, he's basically had his first run for David Pike, finishing third. And now he's gone on to a 9-win streak of six hurdle wins and 3 flat. So we're starting with the initial ratings when joining David Pipe of 60 on the flat and 98 over hurdles. He's now rated 78 on the flat. And his last winning mark from this weekend is obviously 147, which we can only assume is going to go to the mid-150s. Now, this horse is very stoutly bred for as a flat horse. It's a Judmont bred horse, and it's got Breeders' Cup winners on both sides of the pedigree. It's also got 3 siblings rated 100 plus on the flat. One of who I believe is Mirror Lake, who's produced an horse called Imaging that did fairly well with Dermot Weld over the last couple of years. It also made its debut it kind of finished down the pack, but it did make its debut against the 2 times Arc placed Cloth of Stars. So that kind of tells you what kind of horse Judmont did believe this horse was going to be. And the dam of this horse is a half-sister to a horse called Vortex. Vortex, trained by Gay Kellaway, didn't really do much early in its career. This is the final point I'm going to make. Had a slow start to its career with Sir Michael Stout, moved on to Gay Kellaway for 18,000 guineas with a rating of 71. And fast forward a year, and this horse is first past the post 9 times from 13 races and goes on to win a Criterion Stakes and have a rating eventually 110, even runs in a Japan Cup dirt race. So we're looking at this horse and we're talking about it from a Stayers Hurdle angle. But could this be a horse that potentially David Pipes having memories of Junior and looking at the Ascot Stakes next year?
Well, funnily enough, I was on Mr. Nick Luck's programme yesterday, in which Mr. Cornelius Leicester was the stand-in host, and I did mention the Ascot Stakes there for him, because as you say, he's made all this improvement over hurdles, and he's still improving. He remains very lowly rated on the flat, relatively speaking, with presumably the potential to find much more improvement on the flat. So, yeah, I think an Ascot Stakes is Cesarevich. The one ground where he can get his toe in, that's what David Piper's been saying, that he does like cutting the ground. But he's tremendously, tremendously progressive. And another little sort of a little factoid, Dan, sort of sit in with what you were saying there. You mentioned he's got Breeders' Cup winners both sides of the family. Well, his dad Blame, his sire Blame, was the horse who ended Zenyatta's 19 race winning spree in the Breeders' Cup Classic 10 years ago. So a horse now with his own long winning spree has a sire who ended somebody else's long winning spree. Now, isn't that interesting, Binnis?
It's really interesting, Lee. Yeah. You two are books of knowledge, but yeah, listen, it's been a marvellous training feat by David Pipe. I hope he does enter into the Paddy Power Stayers hurdle equation. We'll learn more in his next couple of outings. But he has received a first show of us now for 25-1 for the Stayers hurdle. And if David can keep extracting improvement the way that he has done so far, he's up to that kind of rating now. He's getting there. And it'll be a great story if he shows up at Cheltenham in March.
There's always these type of horses that can do it on both other jumps and on the flat. They're always, to me, they're always the most exciting ones to follow. You know that you're going to see that horse all year. It likes to overturn of the past. You get to see him in all these different situations. And I think for anybody who's just a true purist racing fan of all codes, they've got to love that. They've got to love that in any horse.
Yeah, he's fantastic. And you know, when you look at this Stayers Hurdle division, although we're going to know more about that after Friday's race at Newbury, it hasn't looked particularly strong. It certainly wasn't particularly strong at Cheltenham last March. And interesting, the official rating that Main Fact raced off in that handicap on Saturday was already a pound more than Lisnagar Oscar was rated the day he won the Stayers Hurdle. So he absolutely doesn't have to find a huge amount more to be a contender in a normal Stayers Hurdle. And in the current Staying Hurdle division, he's already a leading player, I thought, for that.
I think you've got a good point as well, Dan. You know, David Pipe is one of these trainers, principally over jumps, but along with the Nicky Hendersons, Willie Mullins, Alan Kings, who's good hurdlers, often end up in those top Staying handicaps on the flat. So, yeah, we may well see him at Ascot. We may well see him in the Cesar at Newmarket.
We had another version of those type of horses running this weekend. Who Dares Wins, we're probably going to see again. But we're going to move on now to the biggest race of the weekend, and that is, of course, the Betfair Chase. And Bristol Dumai, once again, a third time now, has come through to win his favourite race. He had the rain. We've got heavy ground. What I love to see most about this performance this weekend is Daryl Jacobs' emotion after the race. I mean, he loves this horse so, so much. And he kind of, I'd heard that he talked about that last year in the Gold Cup, he wasn't thinking of winning the Gold Cup. It was all about Aintree. And obviously, we've lost Aintree. But do you think now that will be his target for this upcoming year?
I think it will, yeah. I mean, they want to look at the ground, what sort of ground they're getting in the spring. But he's had a few goes now winning a Cheltenham Gold Cup. And he hasn't been able to manage it. He ran third one year in a fantastic race. But it's hard to see why, I think it would be his fourth attempt on the race, he would win it this time. He's never had a go to Grand National. I know they were thinking of the Grand National last season. As it turned out, even if they'd gone there, they'd have gone there having run in the Gold Cup. I think much better to try and just lay your stall out for the Grand National, take him there probably after a run in the Cotswold Chase or something similar. But Daryl Jacob has been adamant that this horse is best on a flat, left-handed track. Aintree is flat. Aintree is left-handed. It's a track that very much favours horses who can get into a good rhythm over those national fences. He's going to have to carry, you know, top weight or something similar if he runs in the national. But the national increasingly seems to look kindly on those better horses who carry the bigger weights. And I think Bristol Dumai will be such an exciting addition to the Grand National field, and I hope he goes there.
Binners, with the performance last week of Tiger Roll and Easy's Land, has the market opened up anymore for the Grand National this year, or has it kind of stayed steady where we were?
Well, yeah, no, it has. It has opened up, Dan. It's a very, very open market. It's 20-1 the field now, with Burroughs Saint and Presenting Percy at the head of the market. It was great to see Presenting Percy do the business for owner Mr. Reynolds. First win for a while. They're going for the national, so that's exciting. As far as Bristol Dumai goes, yeah, as Lee's just said, he's going to have to carry top weight, which isn't going to be an easy task. And we left him at 40-1 unchanged for the Grand National. After the race, I did ask our traders for a Cheltenham Gold Cup price. He is in the betting for that, but they never came back to me on that. So I think that says it all. Probably going to go for the Gold Cup, the Grand National, and that's what Daryl Jacobs seemed to indicate as well. And it's exciting for the Twist and Davis team to have another candidate for that.
I mean, there were quite a bit of fluctuation in the market before the Betfair chase this weekend, when Bristol Dumai earlier in the day had drifted quite a bit. As the rain came in, everybody seemed to kind of get on board again. Bristol Dumai, and just before this particular race, the ground changed from soft to heavy. And much has been said about Bristol Dumai, heavy ground at Haydock, but this horse, I think any ground, it just loves the track more than anything else. We've got Clan de Zobo coming up his inside. It looked really dangerous coming up to the last couple of fences. At any point in that race, did you feel like Clan de Zobo was going to get Bristol Dumai, Lee?
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly having backed Clan de Zobo on Saturday, the way he was travelling into the straight, and certainly given that Lost in Translation had already waved the white flag, I absolutely was thinking that perhaps he was going to win. And Sam Twist and Davis looked to be going really easily, but it was very soon after the back of the penultimate fence when it was obvious that he wasn't going to get past Bristol Dumai. The rain that fell at Haydock on Saturday morning, Haydock, a track that very occasionally rain does fall at Haydock. Normally it's a sun-baked tropical desert, but occasionally they do get a spot of rain there. And they had more than a spot on Saturday. It probably just did for him. I think the way Connection have been speaking after the race, I think they just feel that he was done for stamina in the end. And I guess what's not ideal is that he's had a very hard race on his first run of the season now on the way to the King George. And I think certainly if you're a surname backer from that Ditchet camp for the King George, you probably watched Saturday's race and thought it increased your chances of winning on Boxing Day.
So we've talked about one horse that's got that's could be aimed at the Ryanair. We're now going to talk about the new Ryanair favourite, and that's Paul Keighley's favourite horse, Imperial Aura. Lee, what did you reckon to their performance this weekend?
Oh, he's such a likeable horse, isn't he? I mean, he absolutely seems to relish racing. His jumping at Ascot was fantastic. He's willing, he's enthusiastic. He ticks pretty much every box you could want in a super chaser. It seems evident that Connections are not going to get too carried away this season. They've already pretty much ruled out supplementing him for the King George. It seems as though they'll go to a race at Kempton in mid-January and then on to the Ryanair Chase. That's a route that the owners, that Ryanair Chase route that the owners have taken with Imperial Commander in the past. He went on to win the Gold Cup. I think the hope has to be that next season Imperial Aura will be running in the Cheltenham Gold Cup. And you wouldn't rule out anything with him at the minute because, as I say, he is just the most likeable horse with tremendous talent as well.
Binners, we had quite a few of the biggest races of the weekend have really small fields. How does that tend to like impact on the kind of betting angle?
Well, it's not ideal, Dan. You know, we like races with eight or more runners for obvious reasons. But you know, when you get quality fields like you did, for example, in the Betfair Chase, you know, they become very popular. I heard what Lee said about Clan de Zobo. You know, the ground and stamina might have come into play. I'd be a bit more disappointed than that. Paul Nicholls beforehand was saying that he was, you know, fitter than he had been for the last couple of seasons when he'd been beaten on his seasonal debut. I'm not convinced it was a brilliant trial for the King George. But our odds compilers think otherwise. They cut him to 5-2 joint favourite along with Stable Companion CNA, and they probably know more than I do.
I think part of the thing with the King George business too is that when you look down that list, when you move away from the Nicholls too, you've obviously got Lost in Translation as third favourite, who was tremendously disappointing on Saturday. And then further down, there are horses that I think won't run in the race or aren't good enough for the race. So at the minute, to me, it looks like a race absolutely dominated by two Nicholls horses, even more so the market maybe suggests.
Yeah, you may well be right, Lee. You Lost in Translation, you'd worry about backing him now for the King George, even though he might not have been suited by the heavy ground at Haydock. And as you say, some of the others below, they'll either run in Ireland or they won't even run in the King George. So, possibly it's fair enough that both head the market, but I'm just a bit concerned about Clandizobo. I'd want to be seeing him beat Bristol DeMay if he's completely fit, even if it is Bristol's favourite track and his favourite ground.
I mean, we talk about the kind of extent of riches that Paul Nicholls has in the staying division with Chasers. He had the first appearance of Real Steel since joining from Willie Mullins in the same Imperial Oro race. Real Steel seemed to be going quite well and then hit one, maybe two or three out, and that kind of put end to his challenge.
Yeah, he was disappointing. I was already thinking of him as a live Ryanair Chase horse beforehand. I know Paul was as well. Perhaps he just needed the run more than they expected, but I was disappointed that he succumbed so completely and so quickly in the end. Maybe just needed the run, you know, deserves more chances, but he was disappointing for me.
I mean, we saw the performance in the Gold Cup last year. I think nobody really expected to see Real Steel and Brian Hughes absolutely tanking on the outside coming around the bend. But he did bottom out quite quickly that time. So it could just well be that the horse needed the run this time out and maybe isn't quite the stayer that we thought it was.
Possibly. Just as an aside here, Dan, as I'm talking now, I'm thinking about staying chases while at the same time looking at Shishkin, who, as I speak, is making his chasing debut at Kempton. Now, when people listen to this, they'll know what happened. But I'm speaking now as he's got six fences to jump and his two fences down the side were astonishingly good. So all well so far with Shishkin with six to jump at Kempton. That was a live interlude into this podcast.
Lovely stuff, Lee.
That's all right, yeah, no.
I'm almost tempted to stay with you for the rest of the race. So we'll go from one Paul Nicholls horse who hasn't really lived up to expectations since moving to another. And we're going to talk about Lorena for a moment, just before we get on to the winner of this race. What is the next steps for Lorena after this?
Oh, I mean, the problem is she's bled again. And that was a problem last season. She's clearly got tons of ability, but there must be major question marks over. I thought Ruby Walsh was very good on Saturday. He and Mick Fitzgerald basically gave a live pundit commentary of the race as it was happening. And Ruby was saying going down the hill when she was keen, that was the worst possible thing for her, for a horse that breaks blood vessels. So, yeah, it has to be said, I think that was tremendously disappointing. And I mean, if I was an owner who liked to breed horses, I think I'd be thinking of Falling Stumps now.
Yeah, it definitely seems to be more of the health thing above any lack of talent. Based on, I mean, it was only a year ago that she's beaten Manella Indoor by eight lengths of her fences. We can see where Manella Indoor's gone since then. We'll talk about Song for Someone then. Actually won this really well from the front. Never saw a rival. What do we think this horse could potentially be capable of doing? Still young, only 5 years old.
Very interesting. Obviously, it's hard to rate that race too confident, I guess, on Saturday, given Lorena's not run a race, which means that the winner's beaten one of the horse, albeit a very talented horse. Great training performance from Tom Simmons, who made clear that was the target on Saturday. He thought it could well be a winnable opportunity. He was absolutely right. And the obvious race is the Aintree Hurdle, because the horse likes to go off at a good gallop on a flat track. Aintree looks perfect for the horse, and I go via the National Sprint Hurdle at Fontwell on the way, because again, I think Fontwell would suit the horse perfectly.
Tom Simmons didn't rule out the Champion Hurdle. We gave him a 33-1 first show for that race. He's very technical hurdle. He looks really good. And just an aside, there was a good tweet on Twitter the other day, a picture of Tom Simmons doing that interview. Somebody said, "Watch it with the sound down," and it looks like, and he looks a lot. The mannerisms look a lot like the great late Sir Henry Cecil, and it's quite a funny tweet.
Right, guys, we'll look and see if there were any eye catchers between the two of you for this last weekend's worth of race. If we start with you, Lee, what took your eye out of the racing this weekend?
Well, one just I'd mentioned going forward, a horse that Paul Nicholls ran in that the fantastic main fact race at Haydock, Highland Hunter. he's a horse who is going to be a staying chaser. But I thought it was a really strong race at Haydock, and he ran very well in it too. Interesting, he'd also been entered, declared in fact, for the novice handicap chase at Ascot the same afternoon as a second option in case he hadn't gone into the Haydock race, for which he was a reserve when decks were made. He's going to be a staying chaser, and I think he'll win races over fences over the coming months.
And Bidders?
Well, I'm going to go for First Flow. Dan possibly needs to brush up his jumping a little bit, but he wouldn't have been too suited by the ground at Ascot, so it was a nice performance. We put him into the Tingle Creek chase at 20-1, but more significantly for Paddy Power customers, it was the 317 at Ascot, which was the second qualifier for the Paddy Power Millionaire Chase. 7,000 of our customers opted in and backed the winner for a £5 or more bet. And they go into a draw Monday night tonight, which is streamed live on Paddy Power's Facebook and Twitter. The winner tonight will win 10 grand in cash. And more importantly, they'll have a shot at the million in the Millionaire Chase at Cheltenham on New Year's Day.
Well, good luck to everybody who's involved in that promotion. I've got a couple for you, gents. Both ran at Exeter on Sunday. We're going to start with a horse called Mon Mirrell. It's another Paul Nicholls horse. This horse beat its stable companion, Hell Red. Well, the new stable companion, Paul Nicholls. They both ran an Otoy in the pre-rush. And there was a lot of noise just a couple of weeks ago about Hell Red. A lot of people were keen on this and saying that this could be Paul Nicholls' triumph horse. But Mon obviously disappointed that week. Mon Mirrell's come out and won quite convincingly of the weekend. Jumped to its left slightly, but that shouldn't be any kind of hassle at Cheltenham. And the second one is Crossley Tender, trained by Paul Henderson. That ran in the 133. This is another horse who's gone on to a bit of a winning streak just of late. It's won 3 races in the last 24 days, twice over fences, 1 over hurdles. Each time it's scored with like kind of relative ease. It likes to weave its way through, coming around the bend, and then pings the last few obstacles. That one looks like it could still have a bit of improvement, and it will be going into the tracker. So, guys, we're just going to have a little break right now, and we'll be back with you after these messages.
Paddy Power are streaming all UK and Irish racing on our app. No bet required. Just log in and watch. Terms and conditions apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
Okay, guys. So we're going to have a look now at the Irish racing over the weekend. We'll start at Nace, and Notebook got back into winning ways with a kind of confidence building win over Fakir Doudary. Is the champion chase? Oh, this is a question I really want to ask. Is the champion chase this year the most open that any championship race has been at the festival in years?
As a journalist, I do sometimes stray into hyperbole and exaggeration. I would fear that maybe that strays in that direction just because I think the stayers hurdle the minute looks pretty darn wide open when you look at the betting. I think the champion chase picture is maybe confusing as much as anything else.
Yeah.
In the sense that you've got a horse like Chacun Pour Soir, who is immensely talented, but also is constantly getting injured, even with just minor injuries that cause him to miss races. Jeffrey Desoy last season was the inverted commas best 2-mile chaser, but he didn't show up at Cheltenham in the champion chase, nor in the Schlur chase on his reappearance. The novice chase over 2 mile last season didn't look a particularly stellar bunch, although Put the Kettle is going to want a race on her return already. Obviously, Politologue will be coming back. You've got Grenadine. I can see what you mean. But based on what we've just seen Shishkin do at Kempton on his chasing debut, listeners with a live update here, I think he did almost certainly the most talented 2 mile steeplechaser in training at the moment. And he's only had one run over fences. Obviously, the ratings won't show that. He's just won a small race at Kempton. But you'd think this time next season, we're probably thinking about Shishkin as favourite for the champion chase already.
And what did you take out of this performance, Binners, from Notebook?
Yeah, I think he's put himself in with a shout. And you are right, Dan. It is a fairly open market. You know, we went 20-1 from 33-1 after the race. He's now into 16-1. Some punters thought we were a bit big on that. Lee's already said about the favourite, Chacun Pour Soi. He's brilliant on his day, but he's a bit fragile. He went lame close to the race at Cheltenham. Same goes for Altior. You know, he didn't actually get to the race last year through lameness close to the race. So it's a very, I don't know about the most open, but a bit tricky at the moment for anti-post punters, Dan, which I'm not sure you'd want to be backing either of them because of those sort of concerns. And then you've got Put the Kettle On, who was really good last year, and Notebook has entered the equation. But I'd describe it as a tricky market at the present time, Dan.
I didn't mention Altior either, did I? Of course,
Lee. But that's lucky, because then I had something to say, which is unusual.
Well, absolutely, yeah. Benes is quite right. I mean, he was the superstar, wasn't he, for so long, and we're all looking forward to seeing him in the Tingle Creek.
Agreed. I think everybody will want to see Chacun Pour Soi and Altior back in the field. Just see what they're capable of. I think Altior's still going to have everything he's ever had. So if he does come and absolutely dots up in his race, then I might not have that question for anybody else anymore. But we're going to talk from one brilliant chaser to one that seems like it will be, and that is Janadil, who made his chasing debut and ran really well at Nace this weekend. We'll start with you, Binners. What did you think of that performance, and where do you think he might end up going come Cheltenham?
Well, I have to confess, Dan, I didn't actually see Janadil run. I think it clashed with something at the same time in England. I remember getting a message from one of our traders, Alan Byrne, saying we've cut him to 20-1 from 40-1 for the RSA. So clearly he must have put in a performance of some note. But if putting it in perspective, Monkfish and Envoy Allen head our RSA market at 8-1. Envoy Allen may well be a Marsh Novices Chase horse, but Janadil is twice their price, but has still entered the equation and is into the top 8 or 9 for the race. But I, as I say, I confess I didn't see the performance.
Lee, I was really keen on seeing this race for the fact that Commander of Fleet was due to make his comeback. He did that, but it wasn't a really impressive performance. He kind of really got tailed off towards the end. I mean, we've got a horse there who finished second in the Albert Bartlett behind Manella Indoor 2 years ago. Janadil finished fifth in the same race last year. What did you reckon to his performance?
Nothing not to like about it. He's a horse who took relatively high rank over hurdles last season, in the sense that he ended up with a very solid effort in a Grade One at the Cheltenham Festival. He's clearly going to stay further than he ran over at Nace in that race over the weekend. And you would imagine that he'll be turning up either at Limerick or Leopardstown over Christmas, one of the good novice chases there.
I mean, he was just one of many William Mullins performances this weekend that took the eye. We just mentioned Manella Indoor. Manella Indoor, once again, seemed a really impressive, easy performance, really, in their race at Navan on Sunday. Binners, what did you think of Manella Indoor, and does it warrant its place so high up in the Gold Cup market at this point?
Well, I think he does, Dan. I think it was slightly disappointing, the field at Navan. If I was the course manager, I'd have been... You know, it wasn't the greatest of contests with the absolute respect to any of the beaten horses, any of which I'd love to own myself. But we'll find out more. Manella Indoor jumped well enough, and he did it well enough, but he was expected to do, wasn't he? He's 8-1 unchanged for the Cheltenham Gold Cup. And you know what? He is a horse that I'm particularly looking forward to over Christmas at Leopardstown. I look forward to seeing him against stiffer opposition in the Savills Chase.
And Lee?
Yeah, again, a bit like I said with the previous horse, Dan, there was nothing not to like. He's won two lovely races so far this season. It's interesting reading what Henry de Bromhead said, that makes the point that relative to Mona Lee, he has been a bit in front of Mona Lee at every step of their respective journeys so far. So as a novice hurdler and then as a novice chaser. And he is one of the young brigade coming through in a Cheltenham Gold Cup picture that I think is wide open, because so many of the horses that ran the race last season, you wouldn't necessarily be wild about, I think, for this season. It didn't look a great Gold Cup. The form's not worked out particularly well, and maybe it is ripe for one of the younger horses to come through. A horse like Champ, obviously, who beat Manila Indo at Cheltenham as well. But he's a lovely, lovely horse. And again, we'll be looking forward to seeing him at Leopardstown over Christmas.
Another horse from the Navan meeting I quickly like to have a discussion about is Fakira. Fakira got really well to deny Fire Attack in the Monksfield Novice Hurdle. This horse beat a horse that won on Saturday previously called Gabby Nako. These two went really, really clear on their maiden hurdle on the previous run. Fakira seems to have that kind of turn of foot to the finish line. Do you think that this is a horse that could be there and thereabouts come Cheltenham time? Or is the novice hurdle division just going to be that strong this year that these horses are going to go bye-bye?
I think the horse who has slightly taken me by surprise, had three runs in maiden hurdles last season, finished second every time. So didn't go into this season, I don't think, with people expecting the horse to take particularly high rank. But having won that race at Fairy House by a nose, came through to win at Navan on Sunday in the Monksfield, looked beaten, I thought, most of the way up the home straight, sat fifth for most of the way down there, and then found a tremendous turn of foot. I don't expect Gordon Elliott was thinking that Fakir will be the one who won that race on Saturday. The stable companion in there disappointed Farouk Delen, who started Eben's favourite. And I think I'd be thinking that Farouk Delen maybe will be the better long-term prospect. But you never know.
And what did you think of that race then, Binnis?
Well, a long way to go till Cheltenham, Dan. We'll find out more. We put him into the Ballymore Novices Hurdle at 33-1 first show, 25-1 for the Albert Bar. Again, we'll probably find out more over Christmas. But interestingly, Lee said that probably wasn't the one that Gordon Elliott expected to win. With Farouk Delen going off the even money favourite. But Fakira was a mover in the morning with us. So someone, whether they were connected to the stable or not, I have absolutely no idea. But Fakira was strong enough in the market and did it well in the end.
I do seem to have fallen into the trap of getting a bit too excited about all things Cheltenham this early in the season. So I do apologise for that. But I'm going to do it again. And I'm going to get excited about Hong Kong. The Hong Kong International Racers meeting is on the 13th of December. And really, I just kind of wanted to get a word in for Magical. This could be Magical's swan song, potentially. And for a horse that's achieved so much in her career, she has been overshadowed by Enable. I kind of wanted to just give her a bit of airtime. Is that okay, guys?
Yeah, it's your show. You can do whatever
Absolutely.
You want, mate.
I mean, one horse that did run this weekend that will be running that meeting is possibly the best horse, the best named horse in training, Hot King Prawn. That will be running in the sprint from Magic Man Joe Moreira. But I do want to talk about something else. Magical. This time last year, Magical was supposed to be retired, supposed to be going to see No Nay Never. But things changed. She had another season. But what a season it was, really. She managed to beat Gayef, who this week has been crowned the Cartier Horse of the Year. And yes, she only finished placed in the Breeders' Cup and Champions Day. But, I mean, they were brilliant performances. And what a brilliant horse she is.
She is, yeah. No one would disagree with that. She's been an absolute superstar for Connections. As you say, we got an extra year out of her this season because I don't think we were expecting her to race on. And it'd be great if she just go to Hong Kong as well, because there are years when that Hong Kong meeting is stronger than others in terms of international representation. It's always strong now because the Hong Kong horses are so good. But it would be marvelous to see a few of the big Euros going over there to boost the fields.
I mean, we look set to see possibly Magical, likely Lopi Fernandez, potentially not Tarnawa. What do we think about that, Lee?
I'd be surprised if she runs, just because Dermot Wells already announced that she'll stay in training next season. And I would have expected that if she was going to go to Hong Kong this year, she'd have been set for retirement at the end of the year. I think if Dermot Weld and the Aga Khan are already thinking towards next season's Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe, I imagine they'll be saying that after three Group 1s in the autumn, she's done enough for this season and they'll look ahead towards next year.
And Binners, in terms of Magical and Hong Kong, you guys at Paddy Power have got a bit of a theory, haven't you, about what race you might run in?
We do, Dan. Yeah, first of all, I demand patience is a virtue. I'm sure Nona never can't wait for Magical to retire, but we've been lucky enough to see her all season. The performance at Leopardstown was scintillating. My thanks to Donal McKenna, one of our top international traders at Paddy's. He thinks that Magical is more likely to run in the Hong Kong Cup than the Hong Kong Vase. We make her 4-1 for the Cup and 7-1 for the Vase. And the reason for that, Dan, is we think she'll try and avoid Exultant, who heads the Vase market at 4-5, a really good horse. We think that if she turns up, she'll go for the Cup and hopefully she'll end her marvellous career. Always been slightly overshadowed by Enabel, but she's been brilliant and hopefully she'll end her career with a successful international raid.
With the kind of year we've had, it's been brilliant to see so many horses that still have been able to travel. Another horse who's dual entered, just like it, Magical, is Adabe. That horse did brilliant in Australia at the start of the year. And one more horse I just wanted to have a quick mention that won't be going to Hong Kong is Safe Voyage. These horses, Safe Voyage, One Master, they've all been around the world and they've performed every single time. And I can just, I can't thank trainers enough, really, as a racing enthusiast for how willing they've been to send horses across the world in the type of year we've had. So, guys, we're going to just have a quick talk about the racing of the upcoming week. I wanted to know, have you got any strong fancies or anything, any horses you want to bring to light that are running over the next week? We'll start with you, Binners.
Well, Dan, regular listeners will know that I go on about John Berry's Kryptos over and over again. I'm absolutely delighted for John and Cambridgeshire owner Tony Fordham. Kryptos got back to winning ways at Wolves last Monday. It was no surprise to me that he did win, but the surprise to me was the starting price, 14-1. I'm absolutely amazed about that. He ran well in the Cambridgeshire from a bad draw. Then the last couple of times he's been placed on ground that was too soft for him. 14-1 was huge. Did I back him? No, I didn't. But he's out again on Wednesday at Lingfield in the 12:30 under a £5 penalty, and I think that's an absolute free kick.
Brilliant stuff. And Lee?
Well, in terms of racing, jump racing, we're very much leading to Newbury and Fairy House this week. At Fairy House on Sunday, we have those three Grade 1 races on a fantastic card. Envoyen in the Drinmore is going to be the star turn there. Well, he was impressive as Shishkin was at Kempton, albeit they look like they're going to be going towards different races at the festival. And Friday, Saturday at Newbury, two great days. Really interesting race for the long distance hurdle as Paisley Park has to get his career back on track against Liz Nigar Oscar and McFabulous, albeit I say get his career back on track. That is an example of hyperbole because he's only run one bad race. They're all out to run one bad race, so that'll be great. And then we've got the Ladbrokes Trophy on Saturday. It doesn't look a particularly vintage or classy Ladbrokes Trophy. Sometimes you get a horse in there that you imagine will be Gold Cup horses in the making, but this season that's not the case. There's no champs and there's no horses like that that you think could be that good. I would have really liked Copperhead as a potential candidate had he not run so abysmally at Newbury first time out. And although it's going to be quite boring, the conditional just looked really solid, having finished second in the race last season, gone on to win the big 3 mile handicap at the Cheltenham Festival, gets thrown off a relatively lightweight 10 stone 11. And in what doesn't look a red hot Ladbrokes Trophy, I think he'll be the one. And if I can give you one more down while I'm on a roll, and finish his. Are you brewing up Binners or something? I don't know. If I give you one more, I'd
I've already Con- drunk it, Lee.
Oh, well done. I do go on. Sunday, the Japan Cup. We'll be talking about Hong Kong. The Japan Cup is a sensational race. I had the great pleasure and privilege of being out there last year for Japan Cup. It was one of the best experiences of my racing life. Sadly, this year's race is going to be a lot stronger than the one I saw last year, with two Triple Crown winners in there. Contrailly won the Colts Triple Crown. Daring Tact, in fact, won the Phillies Triple Crown, and they take on Almond Eye. So Contrail, Daring Tact, and Almond Eye in a sensational Japan Cup. I think Contrail is the most talented three-year-old in training, albeit the form figures don't bear that out yet. And assuming his Triple Crown campaign hasn't done too much to take it out of him, I think the prices about him are still pretty fair. So Contrail for me for the Japan Cup and the conditional, the Ladbrokes Trophy.
Oh, Contrail and Almond Eye. I think from a global perspective, that's going to be one of like the absolute highlights of the year. Such a shame that we didn't get to see either of those over in Europe this year. But gents, thank you very much. That, thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Dan.
Maddie has trained you very well indeed.
Relatively painless. All I can say is that it's probably a good job that I'm the one editing this.
You've done a lovely job, Dan. And I say great to a Northern voice presenting. And yeah, no, more the merrier.
I'm not sure about that, though.
You're not very warm to warm us Northerners, business. Sorry, Dan, we've cut off your flow there, but you probably want to end that a different way, mate. Just walking on. Sorry.
Well, that's it from us. If you'd like to be back on Friday, the guy's going to be back to preview the Fighting Fifth, the Old Hennessy, and a ton of Grade Ones from Fairy House. And so until next time, please enjoy the racing and please, everybody, gamble responsibly. We at The Racing Post support Safer Gambling Week, a reminder to us all that gambling should be fun. If you'd like to read more about safer gambling practices and resources, go to www.safergamblinguk.org.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.